Welcome back to Grit with Wisdom. This is the podcast that delves deep into the mental side of mountain biking so that you guys, the listener, can have more fun out on the trails more often. Today, we're back after a short hiatus with not just one special guest, but two special guests.
Yeah.
We've got Matthew Smith here from Canadian Outdoor Medical Consulting, veteran of the podcast, and Dylan Smith, unrelated, I believe, from totally unrelated, from Squamish Enduro. Yeah. Squamish Enduro is celebrating their 10th year this year. And I'm super excited today. We're going to be diving into the topics of risk management when it comes to enduro racing and how you can make good decisions out there to help you reach your peak performance, but also manage safety and risk on race day as well. So with that being said, I'd love to dive straight into this. Dylan, you've got the mic in your hand.
Awesome.
What is risk management and why is it important from your perspective?
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me today too. Stoked to be here. Yeah, risk management. I think like it's an interesting conversation to talk to, especially as it pertains to the Squamish Enduro, where I think, you know, there's a lot of people that ride their bike all the time, that do the race, that don't necessarily go through the thought process or utilize that sort of mental tool chest of considering how that shifts when you're in a race or an event, whether it's Squamish Enduro or whether it's like, you know, a downhill race or a ski race or whatever that is that you're doing, you automatically put expectations on yourself potentially. And so assessing that risk as it pertains to that and choosing a course accordingly. We have three courses, the short course, classics course, and the full course. And so making sure that you're considering what those things mean, what you can ride versus what you can race or want to. And there's other factors that go into it too. I think like, you know, obviously where you are in your life, what else is going on in your life, how much time you can spend on the bike. So yeah, that side of risk assessment, does that sort of answer that?
Yeah, I love that insight there. And I'd love to hear what you've got to say.
Mike?
But I know you staff events like this, you bring a highly trained group of medical staff to help to keep people safe on days like this, but you also experience a lot and have a lot of insights because of that. So I'm curious to hear your perspective on risk management and why it's important for people to consider when they're thinking about signing up for an event like the Squamish Enduro.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jake and Dylan. Great to hang out with you again. I always enjoy working with the Squamish Enduro. I think in my role working in the bike park as well as working medical risk management for mountain bike race events, we're seeing statistically that more people get injured per 1,000 riders in a race context than in a regular riding context, which makes sense. People are going harder. But I think it's extra important, especially in the context of recent studies that have come out that show that in mountain biking, not just in competition, but mountain biking in general, the injury rates are significantly higher, specifically when we look at high life-altering C-spine injuries. A recent study from UBC showed that mountain bikers were significantly, 7 times specifically, more likely to get injured than skiers from a spinal cord injury perspective. So we're seeing an increase in significant injuries, and a lot of those are coming from the racing environment. So I think, to your point, racing is amazing. It's such a crucial part of, from a junior athlete to adults, it's a crucial part of the sport. It's a crucial part of our development. But with an increase in injury rates, I think it falls to all of us, from race organizers to medical providers to individual racers, to really do good risk assessment. You can't take the risk out of mountain biking. It's not lawn bowling. That's what makes mountain biking so amazing. But let's do our best to understand risk and make good decisions so we can enjoy this sport sustainably and for a long time to come.
Yeah, I love the way you frame that. And I think this conversation, it's my hope that it would be a really good tool for all of the listeners out there that they can use to help go through a bit of a checklist and make sure they're making good decisions, not only just when they're racing, but also when they're signing up for particular courses and particular races, ultimately, so that they can have fun out there and not get injured. So I think kind of next topic I'd love to touch on is situational awareness.
I think, you know, from Matt's probably the best guy to answer that question, but, you know, my two cents on it is it's, you know, interesting looking back at the years from our medical reports or our injury reports at the end of the year. We've been working with Canadian Outdoor Medical for a number of years now. And like we have a cataloged injury report of everything from, you know, whether you got a bee sting or, you know, you had a sore wrist from a crash, or there was something very severe on course. We catalog all that stuff. And if you reflect on it, every year the data is almost exactly the same, that, you know, the injuries are happening on the high speed flow trails zones where you're maybe shutting down a bit and you're feeling like this is where I can push the line. Not to say we don't see injuries on things like value added or, you know, very tricky sections, but I think you tune in as a racer or as a rider a little bit more there. It can be the place where you've psyched yourself out a bit, but at the same time, you know, the sections on Another Man's Gold or something on Sudasuga or something, you know, trails that you'd ride as even a beginner or intermediate rider over and over and over again and not think about when it's race day. That's where that injury happens. And that's where that toolkit comes in, like of assessing that and thinking that way, and understanding the situation, I think.
Yeah, great. Well, I'm excited to get into that toolkit in a second. And perhaps as a little bit of fun for the local Squamish listeners here, I'd love for everyone to have a guess at perhaps which trail has seen the most injuries during the race over the last few years. Because I know I got this wrong when we were chatting the other day.
Yeah, it's a good one. Do you know?
Yeah, statistically, we're seeing that Fool's Gold and Other Man's Gold has the highest rate of injuries of all the trails we use in the Squamish Enduro. Again, this is just specifically speaking to the Squamish Enduro race, not broadly statistics in Squamish, but it is absolutely that. It's the Blue Flow trails where people maybe shut down their situation awareness a little bit. Maybe it's a trail we ride all the time, and now we're trying to go that 10, 20% faster. So good thing to keep in mind.
Yeah, that kind of blew my mind because I know usually when the course is released each year, everyone's like, oh, this double black trail, I wonder if they're going to include the rock roll. We're worried about the really hard, really gnarly stuff. Yeah. We don't necessarily think about the blue trail we're going to ride in stage 3 or stage 4.
We do a lot. I think, you know, we spend a lot of time considering risk and how we can at least set a rider up for a position where they, you know, are not rolling into a section that's completely blown out. So we're trying to fix those things before the race when we're working with Sorka to make sure we identify those and stuff. So it is that side where, like, we're not thinking about the perfectly carved berms and rollers on Another Man's Gold because it just seems like a zone that is low consequence, but traditionally it is those zones, right? So yeah,
really cool insights there. And I'm curious, Matt, do you want to speak a little bit more on situational awareness as it pertains from your experience?
Yeah, absolutely. And I really enjoy working with the Squamish Enduro because of Dylan's commitment to safety and the amount of work that goes in ahead of time. And increasingly, as we look at racing, we're putting a lot of work into trail design to try and make the trails safer, to exactly that, make sure trails are true to character, make sure we're not half holes and that sort of stuff. But I think absolutely situational awareness is broadly defined as understanding yourself, understanding your environment and how things will change over time. And that's very different in a race context, whether it's looking at trail design from a trail that we ride to a trail that we race. It's very different in a race context, whether you're a trail designer, a race organizer, or just a racer. And I think as we're developing that toolkit, the way I look at situational awareness is three factors that can affect that situational awareness and helping us to check in, whether we're out for a ride, but especially on race day. The first factor that I look at is internal factors. How am I feeling today? I'm older now and not really involved in the race community much anymore, but using that check-in of how am I feeling today. So on a race day, it's important for a racer to check in, and pro athletes do this. Hopefully we'll have a chance in future podcasts to chat with some of those folks and hear their process. But check in, how am I feeling today? Am I tired? Am I a dad now and I was up all night with my kids? Dylan's well aware of that scene. Am I mildly hungover? Am I overtrained? Am I undertrained? Checking in with yourself, see how you're feeling on race day. And if you're not feeling 100%, maybe don't drop in ahead of that guy that you know is a little bit faster than you or that girl that's a little bit faster than you. So check in with yourself. And we'll talk about that as we're talking about choosing a course. Be honest with yourself. Then there's the external factors. So that's bike setup, weather. Again, statistically, we see more crashes when the weather's bad. And if anyone was at the Sorka DH race, which was an awesome event last year, we had a huge number of crashes, but no significant injuries because the trail speed is lower when conditions are bad. as Dylan mentioned, it's the blue sky effect on a trail we know well. That's when we see the really big bad injuries, the pelvic fractures, the spinal cord injuries. So thinking about those external factors and thinking about how can we manage that risk. And then there's the human factors. And that's part of these, the awesomeness of mountain biking is the friends around you, how that affects you. You know, I grew up racing in the early 2000s and the cross country world, and I loved how you could find that extra 10 or 20% because of all the heckling and all the people around you of speed. But really don't let yourself get too sandy because of the human factors, because of the cowbells and everybody out cheering you on. If you're not feeling it, think about the risk and dial that back. So check in with yourself before a race. Think about the internal factors. How am I feeling? External factors, bike setup, trail conditions, all that sort of stuff. And human factors, how are the people around me affecting my decision making?
It's so easy for all three of those things too to get locked up in your mind and crossed, and just you're just out there and it's race day and you've put some kind of expectation on yourself, and now all of a sudden your friend's telling you to just send it, or you got it, just go for it, or
and you're not feeling it, your bike's not set up right because you didn't have time to dial your tire pressure.
Yeah. And so many little things can add. I think, like, you know, as a little sidebar, that's a great thing to consider in risk assessment. Like, is your bike performing? Like, have you tuned this thing? Like, are you ready to, especially if you're racing the full course, like, are you going to, you know, 2000 meter day, 50 kilometers long with five super challenging stages, like, is your machine ready, like, and up to snuff? Because if you're just like, you know, finger tire pressure check and rolling out there, like, that's the tire wash in the berm that sends you over the bars and into a tree, right? So, like, just paying attention to that stuff and not getting out of it is a huge thing. Committing, like, I think, like, maybe what would you say is the, if you're talking to people after an injury happens, like, where, like, how does that come back to, do you ever get feedback on how they ended up sort of getting there? Or is that not really ever a conversation because the person's like in pain? And
yeah, absolutely. We do collect that. We collect that data. And I also work in the bike park where we collect a lot of data, and we don't really see it's one thing. It's generally a bunch of things. If we look at, you know, sort of broadly risk management, there's things like the Swiss cheese analogy where you look at holes and pieces of Swiss cheese. And if all the holes line up, then an incident happens. A bike that's not quite set up right, conditions that change, and a rider that's being pushed outside of their comfort zone. So it's often all three or four or five things that line up together to create a significant incident. So when you feel those things starting to stack up as a racer, when you feel the weather changing, you feel your bike's not quite dialed in, and you feel yourself getting a little bit tired, that's when you need to think about checking in with yourself and deciding, What are my priorities here? Again, if you're a pro athlete, hopefully you have a team around you to support you, and your job is to send it. But if you have a job and a family to get back to on Monday morning, maybe think about making some decisions.
Or school.
Or school, yeah. And that's a whole other topic, is junior athletes in that.
Yeah, I love the full circle approach you both taking there when you're talking about risk assessment and situational awareness. I wanted to talk about the idea of risk creep, or the concept of risk creep. I know we spoke about this a little bit a couple of years ago when you were last on the show, Matt. But I'd love to know how that relates to racing. Perhaps you can start on that, Dylan.
Yeah, risk creep. It's like, I think I remember hearing risk creep for the first time qualified when we took like an Avi course a long time ago. And it's that sort of like, I mean, you can probably outline it best, but like, you know, that you go one more inch and then all of a sudden, you know, that decision to ride the thing that's maybe a tiny bit sketchy, but probably fine, is cool. And then, you know, that just becomes the baseline, and the baseline just keeps moving and moving and moving until then all of a sudden you're in a situation where you're like, how did we get here? And I think all those factors, you know, those situational awareness factors that Matt was talking about, of just, you know, your friends, your external factors, the human factors, and then, like, you know, conditions and your mental space, all of those things can contribute to that risk creep. And again, that expectation of just like, we're racing. So, you know, you've set yourself this target, and being conscious that there's a tool that you're creating at least some basic toolkit to sort of assess that is key. So risk creep, yeah, I mean, like, I think that's probably the biggest impact for a lot of people out there.
Yeah, it's a pretty crazy concept, isn't it? Because I know for me, like, often I'll just be out riding for fun with friends and it's like, well, what is chill? Because everyone's like, oh, it's just chill, chill. But it keeps going up and up and up. And sometimes before you know it, you're riding some really high risk, high consequence stuff, but perhaps without the thought or the respect it deserves. And I can imagine if we start doing a 5-stage enduro race with that same kind of gung-ho attitude, it could be a bit of a recipe for disaster, right?
You have some of those buddies that you're just like, you know, when you go for that ride, you're like, oh, this is going to be one.
Going to be a friend of yours, right?
Yeah. And racing could be a bit the same, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I totally agree with that, Dylan. And I think it's like, we talk a lot about this in avalanche awareness and avalanche hazard management, but it's really applicable in the mountain bike space as well. I think we can look at it from a couple of ways. One of them is just the probability consequence matrix. Like, what's the chance that something's going to happen? And if something does happen, how bad is it going to be? And again, we look at that in avalanche forecasting and safe travel in the backcountry in the wintertime. But we can really apply that to mountain biking. Like, what are the chances I'm going to fall? And if I do crash, what's going to happen? Is it going to be a dislocated shoulder, broken arm, or is it going to be a catastrophic, potentially life or limb injury? So be thinking about that sort of background. And I totally agree with your concept of risk creep. We certainly see that in mountain biking. It's multifactorial. I think one factor is bikes are just really good. You know, when we started riding, it was Cromoli hardtails with a Jet XC and 2 inches of elastomer travel. And when you're going fast, the bike let you know. Now bikes are so good that you don't get as much feedback as to how fast you're actually going until you're going really fast and you run out of skill and the bike can't save you. So I think that's part of the factor.
Yeah.
I think another factor is potentially just Instagram and all the awesome stuff we get to watch, the content where we've normalized watching lines that have life-altering injury potential. And we normalize that. We wake up and look at that in the morning as we're drinking our morning coffee. So perhaps we're a little less attuned to the significant risk that can be faced when we don't properly align that probability consequence matrix.
You could almost like argue that that's another situational awareness piece in that sort of in that human element, but it's like that influence or digital influence element because, you know, subconsciously that stuff just lingers so much with you when you're how it shapes how you ride, let alone how you race or how other people are racing or what else is going on out there, right? Like you're setting your baseline based on something that's essentially fictitious in your world. It's not real. It's someone else's, the best of someone else's year. That's all you're seeing on Instagram, right? Versus the other 300 days or 250 days they rode or whatever it is, right? So
totally.
Like social media. So good.
It is. It's a great tool, isn't it? And I think we use it wisely. So that's really what this conversation's all about, isn't it? We're not necessarily trying to scare people away from doing super fun races like the Squamish Enduro. It's about helping them choose the right course for them and ensure that it can be super fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something you said there kind of reminded me of a point I've heard you say quite often, Matt. And it's kind of that mental aspect that sometimes riding at our 80% can be faster or better than riding at our 100%. Love to hear you riff on that a little bit.
Yeah, hopefully in future episodes, we'll speak with some coaches and some racers who can speak much more eloquently about that than I do. But I've done a little bit of racing, a little bit of coaching, and I think it's a pretty common drill for a lot of junior racers especially is to go ride a section of trail, and any one of us can try it. Go ride a section of trail at 80% and see how fast you rode it, and then go try and ride as fast as you possibly can at 100% and see your time on that section of trail. And very often 80% is at least as fast and sometimes even faster because we're riding smoother, we're riding cleaner. And
that's like that flow state.
Yeah, absolutely.
That flow state is like not ever really achieved when you're trying to hoot it. It's achieved when you just don't. You're kind of letting go of caring in the sense of caring for an expectation.
Yeah. And I think in order to like be in a race situation where there is that pressure, whether it's perceived or and real in a race situation, to be calm enough, we have to have done a certain amount of preparation, right?
Yeah.
So I'm curious, yeah, this is really a question for both of you, but in your minds, like, you see a lot of racers out there, some prepare really well for the race and have a really good day, and then others perhaps aren't as prepared and struggle a little bit more and don't have a good experience. What does good preparation look like leading up to a race like this?
Yeah, good question. I think, you know, from our perspective, every year we see people who want, I think the Squamish Enduro, like, there's a lot of pros who would say it's one of the harder or hardest races that they race in the year. And it's cool for it to be that, but it doesn't necessarily mean that that's how you have to approach it. And we see a lot of people who kind of want to approach it that way and go like, oh, it's cool. Like, there's a lot of pros there. I really want to get after it. I want to, you know, set this target for myself. They sign up in February and they've got 3 months till race day and it's kind of the kickoff to the season. So you're stoked. And, but then you get to race day and you're like, oh shit, I didn't really realize that I wasn't, 12 weeks wasn't enough for me to get to this spot. Mm-hmm. So I think like, what was the exact question? I think I'm answering it, but I just want to make sure I'm 100% answering it.
I think you hit the nail on the head. So yeah, like, how do we prepare now for the race in April?
Yeah. And I think a big one too is, you know, adults can make decisions and we could get into this potentially as another subtopic to gloss over because it's a big one. But for youth, if you're under 18, I mean, we had, I think 20% basically of the race was under 18 riders, which is awesome. The youth are definitely going to be all right in coastal BC here, which is so awesome. But are you making that decision? If you're stoked to come out and race the Squamish Enduro, you want to sign up, your friends are doing it, and you're, you know, 12, 14, 16, 18, whatever, are you having that conversation with your parents, and vice versa? Are the parents having that conversation to unpack what's going on in the race and what that risk looks like? And, you know, because it's hard, right? It's a hard decision to make and it's easy to be in, you know, have all those, you know, factors impact that decision. So I think that's an important one to consider too.
Yeah, that's an interesting topic, I think. So for both parents and the youth racers out there to make sure they're having that two-way conversation and it's not just one party that wants to do the race and is prepared to take the risks, but perhaps both the parties.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on preparation for a race like this, Matt? What are the riders doing, the riders that you see out there having a good day?
Yeah, I think it's multifactorial. And again, in future episodes, hopefully we can speak to some pro athletes and get their sort of preparation process. But from someone who's just working these events, I think it's, again, maintaining situational awareness. These events, the Squamish Enduro has some amazing feed stations, but making sure you have enough food and water to get you through, being aware of the weather and how those things are going to affect. How those things will affect your day. You are going to have to carry food and water. Make sure you have adequate clothing, something to really push. We have some really cold days here on the coast. And if the Squamish Enduro, we've got super lucky, knock on wood, the last couple of years, we've had amazing weather. But if it's a really cold, rainy day, you need a jacket. Thinking about standing around. So being situationally aware, food, water, clothing, that kind of stuff. And most important thing is just having a good attitude. The people that I see at these races that have the most fun are the ones who just show up with a great attitude, take it all in stride. Sometimes there's a long wait for a stage. Just have a great time. It's an amazing community, and a good attitude, I think, is probably one of the most important things.
You can tell, like, when we're watching people roll off the line or when I'm have a break in the action to just converse with some people who are stoked getting off the start line. You can almost see it in people's eyes, the people who are going to have a good day.
Totally. And they're faster.
Yeah, they probably are much faster if we correlated that. And they're just like, they're there to embrace the experience as opposed to like achieve a goal. And I think like in embracing the experience, like one of those like overarching maybe like life mottos, if you're just chasing the experience, you're probably going to A, enjoy it, and B, then perform better than if you're cutting out that first part and going, I just want to do this. Yeah. And like, you know, I've heard stories over the years of people who are like dropping into a stage, they're super serious. And someone's telling me a story of like, oh, this dude or this girl is just like so like laser focused. And then I pass them, you know, halfway down the stage with a drop chain or something like that. Cause it's just like, and it's like probably something that never happens to that rider on a normal ride, but because of the way you're approaching it, you just let yourself get off. And it can be hard, I think, too, like to be in a race and just let yourself like be chill in a race,
totally.
You know, and not because it's so easy to be like, well, it's a race. Like, I have to go fast.
You gotta send it.
I have to send it. It's a race. I have to try my best. But yeah, what's that toolkit? What does that toolkit look like inside your head of you know, getting to that goal of doing the best? Like, is it focusing on that or is it focusing on having a good time and enjoying the experience?
Totally. Yeah, I really like what you're saying there. I was kind of a classic example of that when I did the Squamish Enduro a couple of years back. It's only the short course, but I was this guy and I thought, I'm not much of a racer. I'm not serious about this. I don't really care. I'm not going to get race nerves. Guess what? I got race nerves. They freshly got me, right? And I didn't ride as well as I would usually ride those stages. And I really liked what you touched on there, kind of like process goals versus outcome goals.
Right.
Because that's what's really helped me in the year since, just getting into, you know, some soccer races and some less serious races, but being able to focus on how I'm actually riding and not like the outcome or how fast I want to ride the trail, who I want to beat. I don't want the person behind me to catch up, all of those things, just focusing on how I'm actually riding has really helped me. The next question I wanted to ask both of you here, I know a lot of people listening to this podcast are probably thinking about signing up. What's going to be next week? How should they make that decision? What are the different course options? And yeah, how do we make a good decision when we're signing up now for a race that's in April?
Yeah, good question. I think there's a number of things that go into it. I try to like boil it down concisely. I mean, it's 12 weeks, right? Basically, maybe a little more than 12 weeks from when you sign up. 12 weeks is not enough time to take a significant jump as an athlete or as a rider, however you want to look at that. So being honest, like you certainly can tune yourself more, for sure. You can improve some skills. But if you're somebody who, you know, could ride the full course, value added, you know, the like the rig stages, the, you know, racing somewhere over their slabs, whatever that is. Maybe that's what you like to ride and not race. So thinking about that, riding versus racing. And I think like, yeah, so it's timeline, it's riding versus racing, and it's understanding who you think you're going to ride with too, because there's a big difference in approaching the race with your two, like, you know, three levels above you friends who are competing for a podium and you're, you know, hoping to just have a good time and be mid pack. Maybe that shifts how you make a decision, or maybe it doesn't, but you know, consider that at least who you're riding with, on race day and what that expectation is going to be. And then how much time do you actually have to put into it too, right? Like, we haven't had the greatest ski winter yet. I'm kind of like fingers crossed, hoping that we can get some more snow through Feb and March, because it's always sweet when there's a bit more pent up energy to get like off the skis and onto the bike. But the riding's been really good. So, you know, maybe you are like considering that, hey, I've been riding all winter and I'm feeling really good and I'm rolling into this in a different way. So it's checking in, like it's checking in with yourself and being honest. Maybe that's like the biggest thing.
Yeah, I like that. Honesty. Being honest with yourself. Yeah. Do you have anything to add there, Matt? People thinking about signing off, thinking about the short course versus the long course. Is there two courses this year, Dylan, or three?
There's three. There's the classics course, short course, and full course. So full course is kind of what it's always been, in the sense that it's, you know, the super challenging five stages, very long day. That's the one we'll see all the World Cup pros on. The short course really is the most popular one. We have the most entries available for the short course, and that's like, you know, your blacks, some bit more challenging blacks, but nothing too crazy. There's probably a blue thrown in there too. And then the classic course, which was new last year, which is awesome. There's going to be more spots available this year. So that course is almost finalized. I can give like a little bit of a sneak peek on that. It's most likely going to be like a full Nelson, half Nelson kind of first stage. We're going to go to another man's gold in the middle, And then the last stage will be the descent component on Hoods in the Woods. So, you know, the Hoods in the Woods one's going to be way more technical, but it gives everybody an opportunity to, like, that's a super fun ride for even the best of riders in this town to just smash through that lap. So I don't, like, we kind of tag the classics course as a intermediate friendly, you know, if you like flow, that's what it's good for. But if you're just feeling like, if you're feeling like you really want to get the most out of racing and you could probably make it through the short course, but you could perform and be really confident and really get a good ride on the classics course, well, then do the classics course, right? Like, there's, you know, I think, like, we've never tried to sort of like position the marketing of them as, like, you know, good, better, best, or like easy, hard, I guess full and short maybe are in that direction. But it's not so much about it being, it's always been that, like, it's not so much about being, let's qualify the skill level of this rider. It's like, it's a presented experience opportunity. And they're all going to be super well supported. It's a great day out there and they're all like co-mingling. So you're going to, whether you're in the classics course short or full, you're going to see other people riding out there on race day from all the other ones. Yeah,
fantastic. It sounds like three super fun courses. And I think that might be the hardest decision for some people trying to choose which one to do, because they all sound awesome. That's great. I wanted to ask you guys, from your perspective, do you have any tips or tricks or tools for managing confidence and nerves in a competitive environment? I know the two can often toil with each other on a race day. Yeah, from your experience both racing and then also watching hundreds or perhaps thousands of races go through the ranks of the Squamish Enduro over the years. Yeah, are there any tools for that?
That's probably a good question for you. You've seen a lot of it.
You've both got answers.
You're the guy who gets to actually watch the course out there. I get to, like, talk to everyone on a radio.
Yeah, again, I think it's the things we've been talking about. It's being honest with yourself, showing up prepared, potentially choosing a course that you're going to know you're going to have fun on rather than one you're going to struggle through. But I think it's also all of those other tools of when you get in it, things like managing your breath, being prepared. I see some racers that are lining up at the start line and they're frantically checking tire pressure and adjusting things. And maybe they've got some kind of GoPro or something they're trying to manage and they just seem super stressed. And then you watch them later on in the course. And I know this happened to me when I was racing, not at a terribly high level, but you get a little bit stressed and you start to try and go fast and you're banging off things and you end up in the rhubarb. So you're going faster. Sometimes the best thing to do is just slow it down, focus, breathe, and then get back on track. So I think it would be the piece of being honest with yourself, being prepared from a bike perspective, being prepared from a training perspective to the best of your ability. And from a mental perspective, expecting that stuff's going to go sideways. And I'm always amazed, especially when I'm watching the high-level athletes, how they can keep their stuff together after a crash. They get right back on the bike, or after a, you know, finishing the race on a flat or something like that. So that mental piece, and I think hopefully future guests will be better positioned than myself to speak about that, but maintaining that mental strength. And that just comes from also just from having a good time and recognizing how lucky we are to live here and to race. And racing really is a privilege for us to be healthy and able to be part of an event like the Squamish Enduro, any of the other amazing events we have here.
Yeah, I think we were talking a bit about, like, the opportunity as we were kind of theorizing what this episode and conversation would be about, that, you know, there's maybe an opportunity to talk again closer to race day about more like race specific side of it. But I think, yeah, as Matt was talking there, I just kind of thought, I think a big thing is in mountain biking that we just have this, like, very personal, you know, freelance approach to it, or skiing for that matter, you know, lots of individual sports like that. Whereas you assume if you play hockey, you're going to have a coach. You just have a coach, right? Like, that's how it goes. If you play on a baseball team, there is a coach on the baseball team. That's how those sports work. But for some reason,
you know, myself included, but like there's always that disconnect between having a trainer or a coach or something like that, and that there's that you can just figure it out on your own. I've got some really terrible habits on riding my bike that I've developed over, you know, 30 years of riding a mountain bike, that I'm sure, you know, could be dealt with much better from a coach. And that's an interesting one to consider too. Like, I'm sure there's a lot of people who just, you know, they just want to get out there. They just want to have fun. But if you're like, if you're goal driven, if you're performance oriented, even a little bit, I think considering a coach is a good opportunity to, A, feel confident in your skills, right? I think that can be part of how you crash. It's like you're going into a corner and you're thinking like, how can I go as fast as I can in or out or through or whatever this corner? If you work with a coach, you can, and you don't have to guess on that anymore. You can know that someone has validated what that looks like. And an interesting, like we've always worked with Dialed In Cycling, who's been awesome in helping us on race day, as well as doing course pre-rides beforehand and running a course actually for the classics course. So they're going to do that again this year. They're going to run a classics course, 3-week seminar. So you can get out, you can actually work with some professional coaches who are going to break down this, like the actual specifics of the classics course. Then we're going to do some pre-rides both on the short course and classics course with them. And then Blueprint Athlete Development's working with us as well to do, as like our performance partner a bit more, and focusing on a training program and coming up with a bit more of like a race tactics approach to it, as opposed to a confidence approach, whereas Dialed In would be maybe more about confidence. The Blueprint Athlete Development side of it, with Joel and his team, will be more about, more focused on how do you maximize that day on the full course. And we're trying to line up like a full course kind of coached pre-ride on the Saturday before the event. So on practice, you'd be able to sign up for that and learn from professional coaches in maybe some certain feature sets. And how are you approaching those feature sets using that, you know, that mental toolkit? How are you exercising that? And then you'll also get like the training side of it too, and just feeling confident on that side. So, you know, all the way from a very intermediate, you know, rider through an intermediate advanced rider to an expert or pro rider, we'll have some options so you can prepare a little bit better. But it's a good thing to consider.
Well, great resources. Like, really well said there. I think, obviously, I'm biased being a skills coach myself, but I'm lucky I get to see the confidence and the results, like, getting some coaching can give riders.
Yeah.
And like you said, kind of, like, speed up that process. And it's all about, really, like, helping people amplify their why, whether that's been having a really fun day, riding in their flow, being relaxed, or whether it is going fast and coming to a certain place. But getting some professional skills coaching, just like we're doing any other sport, can be a great way to speed up that process.
Have you ever done coaching on a skiing or biking, like yourself?
Yeah, it's interesting because in the junior space, we do a lot of coaching. Is, you know, I did a little of, had a coach back in the day with some XC racing, but I hadn't taken any lessons. Actually, I took a coaching session with Jake, and it actually really helped me clean up some of my riding. And
we've done Hueso,
exactly, clean up Hueso and get that top to bottom, which was one of my goals last summer. So I think coaching really is a risk management tool. Helps you be honest with yourself. Sometimes we're not good at being honest with ourselves, and a coach can help you do that. So I'm also a big believer in that. Well worth the money.
Amazing, guys. This has been a fantastic chat. I feel like lots of really useful tidbits of information for people to take out and consider as they train for the race and as they potentially sign up next week. As we close out here, I want to ask both of you, what's your one biggest bit of advice for people that are going to join the race in April?
Yeah, that's a great question. Do you want to take that?
Great question. One biggest bit of advice. I think the biggest piece of advice is that you want to have one of the best days of the year out there on the bike, and your goal should be to do that and maximize everything out of it. It's such an awesome day out there with community and friends, and the fact that it's on, you know, some newly maintained, manicured trails that, you know, you otherwise don't get to ride that way. And you just, yeah, you want to take advantage of that. And you don't want to be in a headspace. You don't want to set yourself up for a headspace where you're putting tons of pressure on yourself and leaving the end at the end of the day going like, I wish I had. So if you're just approaching it like, I just want to have an awesome time out there and I'm just going to smile and be stoked, then, you know, I think a lot of people approach it that way. But if that's a habit that you have of not approaching it that way, like just think that way. Mm. Just sign up. It's a great time. Like we want it to be serious. We've always wanted the race to be at that like upper echelon level of the ability to perform, but ultimately it has to be fun. If it's not fun, I'm not interested in organizing it or really even being involved in it. And we've had questions of over the years, potentially doing like, you know, UCI sanctioning and stuff like that. And I mean, that's cool. UCI sanctioning is awesome, but it adds a completely different element to it, right? And so it's a fun race. Have fun.
I love that, guys. Wise advice. And I think from my perspective, interviewing a lot of pro riders, I think there is space for both, right? It can be serious and fun at the same time.
Yeah. What's your thought?
Yeah, I would agree. Show up and have fun. I mean, if you're in the flow state, you're less likely to crash. But I would just say, be things we've talked about. Be honest, check in with yourself. Make sure you're signing up for the right distance. Think about your situational awareness, race day, internal, external, human factors. How am I feeling? Have I got some coaching leading up to this? And then just have fun and be grateful. There's a lot of volunteers going to this event. And overall, I think everyone has a great time. But that little bit, when someone's standing on a race course, volunteering their time for 10, 12 hours, if racers can just say, hey, thanks, it goes a long way. And I think everyone has a great time. And being grateful to just live in this amazing place and have the health and the ability to go and play in these mountains is something that increasingly I'm trying not to take for granted.
Yeah.
So, super stoked to be with you guys and looking forward to another great season of the Squamish Enduro.
Yeah.
Fantastic, guys. Hey, thank you so much for your time.
Buddy, thanks for
being
a
great chat. Thank you, everyone, for listening. As always, if you enjoyed this conversation, feel free to give it a like, give it a subscribe. It helps us more than you know. And we'll see you all out on the trails.
Cheers. See you out there.